KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP, starting with job openings. The QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimmigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a bartender. The Palouf Harbor Tribe is looking for a tribal environmental coordinator. Each is hiring a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Today is April 3rd, 2025. Mom, Dad, it's your daughter's birthday today. And happy birthday to my sister, Bunny Farr. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, gale warning tonight. Today, east winds 15 knots, increasing to 25 in the afternoon. Seas 3 feet, building to 7 in the afternoon. Tonight, east winds 35 knots, seas 12 feet with rain. And Friday, east winds 30 knots, seas 11 feet with rain. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, small craft advisory through Friday. Today, northeast winds 20 knots, increasing to 30 in the afternoon, seas 6 feet. Tonight, northeast winds 30 knots, seas 12 feet with rain. And Friday, northeast winds 25 knots, seas 10 feet with rain. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory through Friday. Today, northeast winds 15 knots, becoming north 25 in the afternoon, seas 5 feet with rain and snow. Tonight, north winds 30 knots, seas 7 feet with rain and snow. And Friday, north winds 25 knots, seas 6 feet with rain and snow. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory tonight and Friday. Today, variable winds 10 knots, becoming northeast 20 in the afternoon, seas 4 feet. Tonight, northeast winds 30 knots, seas 7 feet with rain. And Friday, northeast winds 25 knots, seas 7 feet with rain. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, gale warning through tonight. Today, north winds 30 knots, seas 7 feet with rain and snow. Tonight, north winds 35 knots, seas 6 feet with rain and snow. And Friday, north winds 30 knots, seas 11 feet with rain and snow. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, a slight chance of rain and snow in the morning, then snow and a chance of rain in the afternoon. Snow accumulation can be up to 7 inches. Highs in the lower 40s. Northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 35 in the afternoon. Tonight, rain and snow. Areas of blowing snow. Visibility 1/4 mile or less at times. Snow accumulation can be up to 11 inches. Lows in the 30s. North winds 15 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 50. And Friday, rain and snow in the morning, then rain in the afternoon. Snow accumulation can be up to 3 inches. Highs in the upper 30s to mid 40s. Northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 35. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 5:57 a.m. at 7 feet 8 inches. A low at 1:28 p.m., a minus tide of 1 foot, and high tonight at 8:24 at 4 feet 9 inches. Your sun rose at 8:06 this morning, and your sun will set at 9:24, giving us 13 hours and 18 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska is weathering a heavy winter storm, and the Kamalungan tribe of Unalaska is considering posthumous membership for the designer of Alaska's flag. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by GCI. Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Unalaska. GCI now offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and same pricing as Anchorage. More information at gci.com/internet.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Thursday, April 3rd, 2025. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. It might officially be spring now, but Unalaska is deep into another winter storm, and local officials are keeping a close eye on the conditions. The storm could last through Sunday, which means at least one community event could be postponed. That's the city's annual spring festival. As of right now, the festival is still on, but a decision on whether or not it'll go forward is expected this afternoon. It's slated to start in the community center gym Saturday at noon and run till 4 o'clock. In a press release, city officials say they're communicating closely with forecasters at the National Weather Service in Anchorage to, quote, track the storm's development, intensity, and potential impacts, including hazardous travel conditions, end quote. Folks in the region should expect heavy snow with possible accumulations between 8 and 18 inches. Winds could get up to 60 miles an hour, and visibility could be reduced to a half mile or less at times. The heaviest snowfall is expected today through Friday. Residents can stay prepared by monitoring the latest forecasts and keeping an eye out for Nixol alerts. The Kamalungan tribe of Unalaska is thinking about recognizing an important figure in Alaska history in a unique way. Benny Benson, the designer of the Alaska state flag, is being considered for posthumous tribal membership. A group of historians published a paper in 2022 explaining that the decades-old understanding of Benson's heritage as Aleutic isn't right. The Aleutic are an Alaska Native ethnic group centered on the Alaska Peninsula. But evidence shows Benson was actually Ununga, with family from the Aleutians. Here's Kamalungan Tribal Council President and Interim Administrator Shayla Shishnikoff.
So the request to enroll him as a tribal member, we did have someone submit that enrollment form on his behalf, along with a resolution.
That someone is regional historian and tribal member Mike Livingston, the paper's lead author. He says it's important to document Benson's Ununga heritage to correct errors in the historical record.
I think it's important that we get the facts as best we can, and if Benny Benson was indeed a member of the Kamalungan tribe, which I believe he was, then it needs to be clearly documented.
Both Shishnikoff and Livingston say that, to their knowledge, this would be the first time the tribe grants membership to someone who has died. Benson, who was born in Chignik on the Alaska Peninsula in 1912, grew up in the Jesse Lee Home for Children in Unalaska and later in Seward. He created his winning 1927 flag design there as part of a contest for Alaska school children. After graduation, Benson fished and trapped foxes with his father on the Alaska Peninsula. He later lived in Seattle and eventually moved to Kodiak as an airplane mechanic. He died there in 1972. Shishnikoff says the tribe's enrollment committee will consider the membership request. The recommendation will then be taken into consideration by the tribal council. As for when the council will vote on the membership request, Shishnikoff isn't sure yet, given what she describes as the uniqueness of the case. The Alaska Food Policy Council held its statewide food festival and conference in Kodiak this year, marking the first time the event has ever been hosted in a community off the road system. KMXT's Davis Hovey was there and has this story.
Sometimes it takes a second.
Derek Shia, the Aleutic Museum, kicked things off on Friday with the lighting of a traditional seal oil lamp. Historically, he says lamps or nanik, like these, were used for warmth, light, and to encourage the sharing of Aleutic culture.
People would gather around oil lamps to do do arts and crafts and perpetuate Aleutian Sukupiak culture by making stuff and, you know, having conversations and dancing. And so today we invite events not for the light and warmth necessarily, but to honor that tradition of, you know, these lamps reflecting that idea of, again, perpetuating our culture.
The two-day conference organized by the Alaska Food Policy Council happens every year and a half and focuses on food security, with presentations about subsistence, mariculture, and developing local agriculture around the state. Robbie Townsend-Vennell is the executive director of the Kodiak Archipelago Leadership Institute, or CALI, which oversees a network of farms across the island called Aleutic Grown. The farm collaborative started a decade ago and now includes food programs in five villages and the city of Kodiak.
And now we are taking the Aleutic Grown model to the Chugach region, Aleutic region, to assist in establishing hydroponic production in their villages. So Aleutic Grown is now going to be Aleutic region-wide.
Vennell was one of several people to give opening remarks at the food conference hosted in the Kodiak Marketplace. The director of the Alaska Division of Agriculture focused his speech on the need to improve food security across the state. He noted how Alaska imports roughly 95% of its food from outside the state, and the same is true of Kodiak Island. Megan Hargis with the Alaska Food Policy Council says since the COVID-19 pandemic, she has seen an emphasis on producing more local food from a variety of sources statewide. She spoke to KMXT during its public affairs show, Talk of the Rock, on March 18th, ahead of the statewide food conference in Kodiak.
Locals realize just how dependent we are on these systems that are very fragile. And when, you know, trucks aren't coming through Canada or the barge isn't running up from Seattle, we're very food insecure.
Locally in the Kodiak Archipelago, there are a handful of micro-scale hydroponics and soil farms, a goat dairy, and several mariculture operations. Dried kelp, kelp popcorn, and a handful of those Kodiak-grown products were highlighted during the homemade food fair on the final day of the conference. Dune Lankard, the final of three keynote speakers, gave his presentation that same day while attendees ate lunch from local caterer Nuniak. Lankard is the president and founder of Native Conservancy, which focuses on protecting habitat and preserving Alaska Native culture along with food sovereignty. He says his organization is helping indigenous communities use kelp and mariculture for three main reasons.
One, so they could help heal and restore the ocean, number one. Number two, to feed their people a traditional food source that they've enjoyed for thousands of years. And three, to build a regenerative economy that they could be part of and proud of.
Lankard says that having a regenerative economy could be key for keeping more people in their home communities off the road system, including in the Kodiak Archipelago. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Let's take a look at what's happening in Unalaska this weekend. The Fireside Writing Club meets in the library tonight starting at 7. Share your poetry, spoken word, song lyrics, short fiction, or any creative work you've been crafting with a supportive community eager to provide feedback and inspiration. This club is open to all levels of writers ages 16 and up, regardless of experience. A Youth Swim League meet takes place at the Aquatics Center Saturday morning at 10. Don't forget, it's Team Picture Day. And finally, the Museum of the Aleutians is launching a new exhibit Saturday evening at 6. This is a showcase of Ununga art, open to all ages. For more info on these events and everything else coming up, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Stay warm this weekend. We'll see you Monday.
KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska. statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is imposing what it calls unprecedented conservation measures to address declines of Gulf of Alaska Chinook salmon, which is currently under review for listing under the Federal Endangered Species Act. As reported by KUCB's Theo Greenlee, the department said in an announcement on March 18th that it will be restricting Western Alaska king salmon fisheries, including in Kodiak, Chignik, and Sand Point. Matt Keyes is an area management biologist at Fish and Game's Sand Point office. He says this is the first time the department has used data from one region to trigger management action in another.
And that is unprecedented from managing a fishery based on fish that are not found locally to the systems in the area in which we're harvesting fish.
Sand Point, off the Alaska Peninsula, is in the middle of the management region known as Area M. And although it doesn't have its own king runs, fishermen intercept salmon that migrate through the region. In recent years, Area M's harvest levels have drawn criticism from stakeholders in western Alaska who argue the fishery reduces local salmon returns. Keyes says genetic sampling shows much of the Chinook harvested in the South Peninsula fishery actually come from the Pacific Northwest. He added that the new management approach reflects a broader effort to distribute conservation burdens more evenly across the regions that encounter Gulf of Alaska Chinook. Recent Chinook-related closures have also taken place elsewhere in the state. Last year, the fleet in the federally managed Central Gulf of Alaska pollock fishery, which is based mostly out of Kodiak, voluntarily ended its season when Chinook bycatch reached a specified threshold. Keyes says the department is looking at ways to try to boost Chinook stocks throughout the Gulf, and additional measures could affect other fisheries.
Everyone that's catching fish is going to bear a little bit of that burden, at least in the westward region.
The current planned restrictions apply only to purse seiners and are limited to July, but Keyes says the management plan could evolve based on in-season harvest numbers.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The harvest allocation for king salmon in southeast Alaska is lower than the region's commercial trawlers expected. As reported by KCAW's Catherine Rose, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced on April 1st that 130,000 treaty Chinook salmon will be available this year for all southeast fisheries, down almost 40% from last year's allocation. From that total, trawlers are allowed to catch 92,000 king salmon. The balance of treaty salmon goes primarily to sport anglers. Sitkin Matt Donahoe is the vice chair of the Alaska Trawlers Association.
It's pretty bad news. We heard that it's going to be lower than last year, but we didn't know how much. It's a devastating number. It's the worst ever. I mean, what industry can afford a 40% reduction?
He says it's the lowest number in the history of the Pacific Salmon Treaty.
I hope the treaty folks are mistaken, because it'd be even worse if they're not mistaken, if the fish are in that kind of trouble. But I think process is flawed.
The U.S. and Canada established the Pacific Salmon Treaty in 1985 to regulate the commercial and recreational harvest of king salmon in coastal waters from Alaska to Oregon. The process for determining harvest numbers has evolved over the years and recently has used catch rates from winter king fishing to establish the numbers for the summer season. Regardless of the method, however, the result has been a downward trend in commercial harvest rates over most of the last four decades. Recently, chum salmon have equaled or bettered kings as a moneymaker for Southeast trollers, but Donahoe says chum and coho can't be relied on to save small boat fishermen. Kings, historically, have been trollers' bread and butter.
With the price of coho was so bad last year, that a lot of guys didn't go fishing, and it was just cheap to go chum fishing. And they had pretty good chum fishing here in Thick and Sound, but you can't count on that.
The impact of the lower-than-expected harvest allocation on trollers is further compounded by a new distribution of Alaska's treaty kings. Trollers' share of the salmon was reduced by the Alaska Board of Fisheries at its February meeting this year from 80 to 77%, with the 3% difference going to sport fishermen. But the allocation news means sport fishermen will be hit too. Donahoe says, quote, "They're going to have a lower bag limit. Everybody's in this boat," close quote. The summer season for commercial trolling opens on July 1st. Many trollers take to the water much earlier, however, in the spring troll fisheries, which target salmon produced exclusively in Alaska's rivers and hatchery programs, and are not covered under the Pacific Salmon Treaty.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Mariners across coastal Alaska rely on weather data coming from marine buoys to stay safe out on the water. These buoys provide information about water currents, wave height, wind speed, and more. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports that amid shakeups in federal agencies, how that data reaches regular Alaskans could be changing.
Keith Cochran of the Bay Islander checks the marine weather forecast daily before he heads out to fish.
The forecasting has got so good and detailed and precise. I mean, it's a matter of like leaving the dock, you know, 2 hours later or 4 hours later, or slowing the boat down so I get out there at the opportune time.
Cochran, who fishes out of Kodiak in Oregon, is currently fishing for pollock. It's the ubiquitous whitefish's A season in the Gulf of Alaska and is the largest fishery in Kodiak by volume. Cochran scrolls through weather data on his smartphone or on his Time Zero navigation system on his boat. That data is mainly being collected from a network of 3-meter buoys all over Alaska and North America. There are 19 of these weather buoys in Alaska, plus 8 coastal stations on land that record weather data and ocean observations every 10 minutes, 24/7. That data is averaged together over the course of an hour and then transmitted to a satellite that federal agencies pay for. The wider network has roughly 100 weather buoys and 39 tsunami stations across the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, and international waters. The satellite relays the data to the National Data Buoy Center on Mississippi's Gulf Coast. Part of the center's roughly 30 federal employees and about 100 contractors work in shifts 24 hours a day, combing through the data to help forecast marine weather and monitor for tsunamis.
So we've been here almost 50 years, creating a large number of weather buoys, and we've expanded with time. Certainly part of that expansion is with Alaska.
William Burnett directs the center. Some of the center's staff members have quit as part of the Trump administration's fork in the road offer, while others were fired amid sweeping cuts to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, according to reporting from the Columbian, a newspaper in Washington State. Burnett would not say how many, but he says the remaining staff will be able to maintain the nation's weather buoys and deliver marine data.
from the technicians, the engineers who are designing the buoys, the meteorologists and oceanographers who are analyzing the data and quality controlling it. It's a 24/7 network, so they're always looking at the data.
After that, it's sent to the National Weather Service's global telecommunication system and distributed in real time through smartphone apps, web pages, and NOAA weather radio for anyone, including Cochrane, to access for free. The agency's data online gets 9 million hits a day, according to Burnett. Cochrane says he's starting to see more and more for-profit marine weather products with subscription models and fees. For example, he pays $10 a month in the summer for a service that helps him fish more efficiently.
When you get into sea surface temperature, chlorophyll, temperature at different areas in the water column, those things we would call premium weather options, or they do call them that, and they charge a lot more for them because those are the things that you use to try to go figure out where your fish is going to be or where they're moving or where they're migrating.
There's growing interest from private companies to sell their own marine weather products. Burnett with the National Data Buoy Center says it's not necessarily competitive. He sees opportunities to partner with private companies.
National Data Buoy Center and the National Weather Service operate what we consider to be that backbone foundational network that people can always rely upon to go get observations. But our collaboration with industry partners and the commercial sector will allow us to grow in areas where we may not be able to place observations, and they may be able to collect additional data for us.
But Rick Toman, a former forecaster who worked for the National Weather Service in Alaska for more than 30 years, is skeptical, especially about service to rural Alaska.
Operating in rural Alaska is extremely difficult logistically, and private companies, venture capitalist-funded companies, by definition are in business to make money, and that's going to be a tough lift in rural Alaska. Could it be done? I guess we'll find out.
In the meantime, Burnett says the center will keep its network of weather buoys, each worth up to $250,000, maintained and operational. The maintenance window for the roughly 100 buoys across North America, including those in Alaska, begins in March and ends in November. Burnett says the center will repair as many buoys as possible in that time frame, and this spring they plan to repair buoys around Kodiak with help from the Coast Guard. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumigan Corporation. Located in Sand Point, the Shumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sand Point Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Shumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sand Point, on the web at www.shumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Shumigan Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Takes to the sky like a bird.
You are listening to KSDP Radio, 830 AM, Sandpoint, 88.1 FM on a translator, K201DA, King Cove, Alaska.
Come on.